but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
I was in the press box, Penn State, Beaver Stadium. Jake Trotter, ESPN.com, was there. He drew the duty of talking to James Franklin after the game. I want to know what he thought of the game and where's James Franklin's head and what he makes of Oregon. Jake Trotter joining us. How are you, man?
What's going on, John? Long time no see.
I know. Man, it was a long day. I felt like it was a really long day. I got there way too early to the stadium. I was there too long. But in talking with you, you saw this coming because I said, who's going to win? You said, man, I have seen this before. James Franklin loses this game. Like, you sort of forecasted it. What did you see and what did you think as the game was coming up?
Well, listen, I mean, I've covered a lot of Penn State over the last couple of years since I moved back to college football, and there have just been these games where, against top 10 teams mostly, that they just cannot come up with the play they need to win, or they do a couple of curious things from a coaching perspective, or they have a strange game plan, or they make an ill-advised coaching decision at the end. Whatever you want to, take your pick, depending on the game. And I think Oregon game had probably a little bit of all those. They just cannot win this game. I mean, you're 1-18 against top 10 teams in the Big Ten since James Franklin is coach. It's not a coincidence. It's not a fluke. It's not an accident. It's a trend. And Penn State just has been unable to win this type of game. And I also, it wasn't just about Penn State. I mean, I was Oregon hadn't played anybody. Oklahoma State's terrible, so on and so, Oregon State. But just kind of watching Oregon from a distance the first month of the season and knowing what that program is about. And I was in Eugene for the Ohio State game last year. I just thought that they would come in there and play well. And I really was already, and now more than ever, a believer in Dante Moore, who was super impressive. I mean, take the throws and the runs and all. His poise was really striking. Never was jumpy, never was indecisive. He went through his progressions on every play, was accurate with the football, and never looked rattled. It was kind of the opposite of what we got. I was at Ohio State, Texas in the opener with Arch Manning, where from the jump he was indecisive and rattled. So I think the combination of all those factors is why I thought Oregon was going to win the game. And sure enough, big mistake late was the difference. But I think even before that, just Penn State couldn't get anything going offensively. I thought they came out in the first quarter just doing a lot of goofy stuff instead of running their offense, which I've seen them do before. And, they made a pretty furious rally at the end, but, wasn't enough. And I think Dante Moore and company deserve a lot of credit for weathering that storm, because Penn State had all the momentum going into overtime, especially after they scored the touchdown on three plays in the first overtime. And Oregon's like, all right, well, we're just going to answer. We'll score again, and then we're going to pick you off to win the game. So super impressive by Oregon. And until Penn State wins a game against a top 10 team, you just can't pick them to do it. You can't do it.
Jake Trotter, ESPN.com, is our guest. Oregon's defensive front held up better against the run than I thought they would. They were imposing, particularly in the first half. You've seen Texas, you've seen Ohio State, you've seen these teams. How does Oregon match up against the best in the country in that way?
Well, I think better than maybe we would have thought, given some of the guys they had to replace, whether it was Harmon or, whoever. But again, if I'm Penn State, I go into that game running the football between the tackles. And they just did not do that until the fourth quarter. And I thought that was another thing that was puzzling. They just didn't really, I think, test Oregon's front stopping the run the way that they, you know, when you've got two backs like that and you've got an offensive line you believe in and, you know, you want to get your quarterback in some positions to succeed. I think that, you know, Franklin didn't come out and say that, but I think that he was hinting at, you know, they just could not set up third and two. And that was a big difference in the game where, you know, Oregon had third and two, fourth and one a bunch, and Penn State had third and seven, third and nine a bunch. And I think part of it was, you know, they couldn't establish the running game against Oregon, and also, like, they just didn't try to for a lot of the game. So, again, that kind of gets into, you know, some of the game planning, which I didn't really understand. But, yeah, credit Oregon. They did phenomenal job against Singleton and Katron Allen, and at no point did it feel like those two guys, you know, at no point it felt like they were impacting the game that Penn State really needed them to win.
Impressive win on the road for Oregon. A lot of tears on the field. Dante Moore's crying. Dan Lanning's, you know, I don't know, looking like he's got glassy eyes. You know, it's it wasn't quite the celebration that they had last year in that first game against Ohio State, but I do worry about the length of this season. Can you maybe speak to that a little bit about how you have to pace yourself, how the wins at the end and how you're playing at the end matter like they matter in the NFL now? And, you know, there's a lot of ball to play here.
Yeah, and Oregon should know that better than anyone. They had the phenomenal regular season last year. They win the Big Ten title their first year in the league. And then, you know, after the layoff, they go to the Rose Bowl and just get obliterated by Ohio State. And so none of that really matters as much when you don't play your best ball, when it matters the most in the playoff. You know, it's their schedule is interesting. They have a bye this week, right? I think they have a
bye.
Yeah,
they're on a bye and then Indiana.
I was going to say they have Indiana coming to town. So it works out, you know, you get this big win, you can kind of take a you know, step back and, you know, reevaluate a few things, you know, heal up a little bit because that was a, you know, physical game, emotional game. And then you've got a game Indiana team coming to town that, you know, is better than people thought. You know, they had a lot of good players coming back from last year. So I think that, you know, some people maybe overlooked them because they didn't have Curtis Rourke, but Fernando Mendoza is playing as well as any quarterback in the country. That includes Dante Moore. In fact, I think those two guys right now, you know, probably one and two in the Heisman conversation with John Mateer, you know, with the hand injury. So, you know, if you get through this Indiana game, you look at the rest of the schedule, and I see a lot of winnable games. I mean, Rutgers, Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota, you know, USC certainly isn't, you know, intimidating. And then you go, you know, to Washington for the rivalry game. So you want to win every game you can because you get the bye, you know, you, especially now with the reseeding, getting the top seed is going to matter more because you're not going to have to play an Ohio State that doesn't win the Big Ten, but it's still maybe the most talented team. But you do want to peak at the right time. So you can win all your games and still play your best ball in December. But I do understand, you know, you don't want to be dominant in October and then kind of, you know, fade out in December.
Last year we saw Ryan Day survive losing at Oregon, losing the Michigan game. People are calling for his head. I know you went and spent some time in Columbus with Ryan Day in August and wrote this great piece on ESPN.com. What did you learn in there that maybe coaches should be paying attention to?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, for Ryan Day, I mean, obviously, I don't think people, Ohio State fans, realize how much he cares and how much this affects him and, you know, how you have to have, you know, people in your corner to help you with the emotional and, you know, the strain that you go through. I think the most interesting thing he said to me, I thought, was because I was at the Michigan game and it was such a bizarre, I mean, maybe the most stunning result of a game I'd ever attended. Like, I just had no, I couldn't game out a scenario in which Michigan won the game beforehand. And then obviously Michigan went out and won it. And you hear some of the jeers and the chants from the stands directed at him, and just the, you know, the criticism nationally. And you had no idea like what they were going to look like going into that Tennessee game. But I think the one thing he said was, you know, after they won the national championship, just how many fans he heard from that, you know, the other side of it, of people caring. You know, I you know, I drove through an ice storm to get to Dallas to watch Jack Sawyer run the return for a touchdown. I you know, went with my, you know, dad to the Rose Bowl, and we saw, you know, Ohio State play its best half of football maybe ever. And, you know, went down the national championship, and I'm always going to remember Jeremiah Smith catching the ball down the sideline. So I think he has a good sense of the fan base and what it means. And, you know, he embraces all the criticism and the expectations with the Michigan game. I almost think that they'd be better off if they, like, downplayed it a little bit internally, because they lock up in that game. They're, like, not the same team that you see otherwise. But, you know, to his credit, he understands all of it. And, you know, while I think, like, some of his players and assistants and people in the program, you know, they don't think some of that stuff is okay. I mean, he had to have security posted at his house, for crying out loud. That just doesn't happen at a lot of places, you know, even some of the more fervent places in college football. But, you know, he owns all of it. He embraces all of it. And, you know, the way he looks at the Michigan game now is it's an opportunity for them. You know, imagine what it's going to be like if they do win that game. So, you know, we'll see. I think that they are, you know, just as legit as ever, even though it's a new team. And, you know, right now you can make the case that number one and number two, in whatever order, is Ohio State and Oregon.
Where's Penn State in your mind? And can James Franklin come back from this? Or is there something broken there?
Well, I mean, clearly something is not right. How does he come back? I mean, you know, they play Ohio State November 1st in Columbus. Win that game, and then the narrative changes. But until they win that game, it's only going to balloon. And, you know, I was talking to someone after the Penn State Oregon game, and I was just like, you know, like, they got to win one of these, because the pressure only builds a little bit more with every loss. Like, every time you lose one of these games, it just gets bigger and bigger. It's like the Michigan game for Ohio State. Like, you lose, you know, three in a row, goes to four in a row, it's even magnified the next time. So I don't know what they can do to fix it. They clearly don't know what the answer is, because it keeps happening over and over again. And as I said, like, 1-18, that's just not a coincidence. It's not bad luck. It's just who you are. Until they win one of those games, it's going to continue to go that way. But they have an opportunity. And, you know, that's something I talked to Drew Aller about after the game. Like, you know, it's a long season. We're going to have an opportunity. He didn't single out Ohio State, but that's what he was talking about. And then I think they have, I'm trying to remember everybody's schedule now. I think they have Indiana coming to, when do they have Indiana coming to town? Let me call this up real quick. Cause,
yeah, you get Indiana coming there November 8th. Yeah, back to back.
Yeah, so it's back to back, back to back games where they have, you know, potentially top 10 teams. So you win both of those, you know, it changes.
Changes the narrative.
It's going to be like, yeah, exactly.
Jake Trotter, I appreciate you, man. I will see you in the press box. Thanks for your expertise, man.
Thanks, Todd. See you down the line.
All right, there he is from ESPN.com, Jake Trotter. Penn State's got a big opportunity going to Columbus and then getting Indiana at home back-to-back after that. But you got to wonder, did Oregon beat Penn State? Did it break Penn State? I think it's a question. We got the 5 at 5 coming up top of the hour. We're going to lead you right into Monday Night Football right here on the Bald-Faced Truth on 750 The Game. So much more ahead, and we will take it. We've been on a roll here. Leave it here.